We ran out of time in our last lesson to complete the Song of Deborah found in Judges chapter 5. And the last time we were together, we had gone from verse 1 through verse 12 there of chapter 5. And what we had learned so far in that Song of Deborah, we had learned about the explanation of the reason for the song. We had heard the prelude of the Song of Deborah. We had met the audience of the Song of Deborah. We had heard Deborah's praise in that Song of Deborah. And also we had gone through the memory of Deborah's song, of the things that the people had remembered prior to the 20 years of oppression under King Jabin and his commander Caesarea. And then as we ended up last week, we came to the people of Deborah's song in verse number 13. So working her way through these details to set the scene, it was time to sing the song about the war she had left. And so we come to these people of Deborah's song, and we start with those people, the people who came to fight. If you're doing the outline, it's those who came to fight. Then survivors came down to the nobles. The people of the Lord came down to me as warriors. From Ephraim, those whose root is in Amalek came down, following you, Benjamin, with your peoples. From Makar, commanders came down, and from Zebulun, those who wield the staff of office. And the prince of Issachar were with Deborah. As was Issachar, so was Barak. Into the valley they rushed at his heels. Now the word survivors here in verse 13 is translated better in some other versions as the word remnant. And the word remnant really means survivors. But we're thinking about, when we think about survivors, we think about survivors of the catastrophe, like of the war. But that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about a remnant. She's talking about a small group came to fight. A small group, not the whole group, but a small group. And that's better than the word survivors. Deborah is stating this is a simple remnant of Israel that was drawn forth to rule over these nobles. Which nobles? The only answer is the Canaanite nobles ruling the nation of Israel. So the people of the Lord who came to help defeat the Canaanite nobles were the warriors. The remnant were the warriors. Who were these people and from where did they come? Well, the first who came to fight, it tells us, were from Ephraim, specifically those who dwelt in the area where Amalek once lived. When did Amalek live in Ephraim's land? If you remember, 118 years before this time in the story, Eglon, in that second cycle of sin, Eglon, the king of Moab, had enlisted the help of the Ammonites and the Amalekites to take control of Israel. And for 18 years, Eglon and his Moabites, along with those men of Ammon and Amalek, had those warriors had moved their families into the land of Benjamin, which was right next door to the land of Ephraim, to live. Jericho, the city of palm trees, was in Benjamin's land, right in the corner of next to Ephraim's land. And that was where that Eglon held his authority as judge, as an oppressor over the nation of Israel for those 18 years. So Jericho was in Benjamin's land. The tribes had to take back the land of the oppressors of that from Eglon. So Judge Ehud comes in. He defeats Eglon. And if you remember, the problem is, and this is only 100 years before, because remember, there's about 18 years they were under the oppression of the king of Moab. When Ehud comes in and he runs off the oppressors, they don't get rid of all the Amalekites who have settled in the land of Ephraim and in the land of Benjamin, by the way. So these men were from the territory of Ephraim, and they were men who came to fight with Deborah from those areas that for 18 years before, 100 years before, were inhabited by the Amaleks, and some of them were probably still living in the area. So these men were from the current home of Deborah, which is the tribal area of Ephraim. And no doubt they journeyed with her and Barak to go back way up to Hazor. The tribal area of Ephraim was bordered there with the tribal area of Benjamin. And they joined. Benjamin also joined, if you remember in this passage we just read, they joined Deborah and Barak in the fight. So at this point in the story, Benjamin and Ephraim lived close. They were close. And they were also close to Deborah and her guidance and leadership, because Deborah's palm tree, where she ruled from as a magistrate in the Ephraim area, was just a few miles from the tribal area of Benjamin. And Benjamin's warriors joined in the battle. Who is Makar? Makar's commanders came down. Where did these commanders come from? Makar was the only son of Manasseh. Manasseh was the brother of Ephraim. If you remember, Manasseh's tribal land was north of Ephraim's land. However, if you also remember when we studied the book of Joshua, when the land was allotted by Joshua, Manasseh got their portion of the land first, and it was huge. Then Ephraim's land, Manasseh's little brother's land, was carved out of Manasseh's land at the south part of it. However, we must remember also that half of Manasseh's tribe lived on the other side of the Jordan River, the east side of the Jordan River, and the other half lived on the west side of the Jordan River, on the side where Ephraim was. And they lived there north of the allotment that went to Ephraim. So they're right there together. So this reference must mean that these commanders who lived on that west side of the Jordan River, just north of Ephraim, came to help Deborah and Barak with the battle. Now, when Deborah and Barak made their announcement concerning the campaign, the commanders of Manasseh, whose only son was Makar, so that's the relationship, came to help with the organization of the campaign. Now, once in the north, in that north portion of the Promised Land, the tribe of Zebulun was enlisted. And if they could hold a staff of office, they joined in the campaign. What does that little phrase mean? The staff of office. I'm telling you, it's this. It is a reference to those who had the authority within the tribal area of Zebulun to muster the troops to battle, to call the troops to come war, be part of warriors in the war. They came. Well, Zebulun was instructed by the Lord through Deborah to call its people to the Lord, and so they did. The passage then turns to the princes of Issachar were with Deborah. Who were the princes of Issachar? Now, in this song, Deborah had revealed some personal information that we're not privy to back in the introduction of this story in chapter 4. The Hebrew rendering says, "My princes of Issachar were with Deborah." my. Okay, that's what the Hebrew says. It's not here in our English, but it should be. So if that is correct, and I do believe it is correct, Deborah was born a descendant of the tribe of Issachar. She married a man by the name of Lapidoth of the tribe of Ephraim, which, by the way, was totally permissible by the Lord and by the Lord's law. Therefore, simply the mention of Lapidoth's name in the introduction was to identify him as belonging to the tribe of Ephraim, even though Deborah belonged to the tribe of Issachar. Belonging to Lapidoth gave validity to Deborah to judge at her palm tree in Ephraim's land instead of back up in the land of Issachar. And because of Deborah's involvement in this campaign, and because she was of the tribe of Issachar, the rulers of Issachar supported her. It meant the army of Issachar would be there to help. Now with Barak, all of these cousins, all of these nations of Israel joined together, and what did they do? They joined into the valley and they rushed at his heels. Whose heels? Well, it has to be Caesarea, who was the commander of Jabin's army. Well, those were those who came to fight. And as we pick up in verse 15b, Deborah tells us about those who failed to fight. Isn't it interesting that we always see a positive and a negative in the Hebrew writings? It can be a praise and it can be a condemnation also. So Deborah has just praised those who came to fight, and now she is going to condemn those who failed to fight. Verse 15b. Among the divisions of Reuben, there was great resolve of heart. Why did you sit among the sheepfolds to hear the piping for the flocks? Among the divisions of Reuben, there was great searching of heart. Gilead remained across the Jordan. And why did Dan stay in ships? Asher sat at the seashore and remained by its landings. Four of the northern tribes failed to fight with their Israelite brethren: Reuben, Gilead, Dan, and Asher. Well, you say, wait a minute, Gilead is not the name of a tribe. Well, hang on, I'm going to explain that. Reuben searched, if you remember, Reuben was mentioned first. Reuben searched its heart and wanted to fight, had great thoughts about it, but could not draw the will to fight. It procrastinated in its pastures with its flocks instead of helping its brethren. Gilead, that was mentioned there, you say, wait a minute, there's not any tribal area of Gilead. Yes, there is, and here's the reason why. If you look at the maps, the area called Gilead was on the east side of the Jordan River, way up north, where the Oaks of Bashan are and all of that. And there lived the other half tribe of Manasseh, who controlled the portion called Gilead. And they called it Gilead. It was a second name for the tribe over there. So if they lived on the side of the west side of the Jordan River, the side where Jerusalem is and Bethel and all of that, Shiloh, Jericho, they called that Manasseh area, its nickname was Makar, the only son of Manasseh. If the people lived on the eastern side, the nickname for them, for those Manassans, was Gilead. And so Deborah's got it right on both cases. But neither did this half-tribe called Gilead of Manasseh come to help its brethren in the fight. Dan stayed on its ships, it says. This verse does not mean that Dan was a ship-going people. Dan's tribal area was on the border of the Mediterranean Sea, down about the top of the central area of the Promised Land. And living there near the seaports, Joppa and that type of area, what would be that area, the men of Dan would have worked on the docks in the shipping industry. In other words, what Deborah is saying, instead of coming to help fight, you stayed at work on the ships, unloading and loading the ships, rather than helping your brethren. Asher followed suit with the tribe of Dan. Asher, if you remember, it's a tribal area that borders on the Mediterranean Sea and the northernmost part of the Promised Land. It's Naphtali, it's Zebulun, it's Asher. Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali. Naphtali, Zebulun, Asher. Now, Zebulun and Naphtali are in war. They're the ones where that land, that battle is going to be fought. And over here on Asher, we've got Asher over here. They're going to actually make it a little way into that area, and the fight's going to return back towards the Naphtali area as they're running. And what does Asher do? It remained at the ports instead of helping their brethren nearby. Now, the word ports is also called landings. It's where the ships come in and they would arrive and land there to be loaded and to be unloaded. We call them ports today. They called them landings back then. Deborah has told us about those who came to fight, those who failed to fight, and she tells us about those who had to fight, as we read here in verse number 18. Zebulun was a people who despised their lives even to death, and Naphtali also, on the high places of the field. The kings came and fought, then fought the kings of Canaan at Taanach, near the waters of Megiddo. They took no plunder in silver. The battle against Caesarea and his army would take place and begin in the tribal area of Zebulun and also include a little portion of Asher and then end in the area of Naphtali. The headquarters of Jabin and Caesarea were in Naphtali's land, and both of those headquarters set up where they could see, on the west side, they could see Lake Merom. But the Lord had instructed the Israelites not to fight them in their home tribal area there in Naphtali by Lake Merom in their home base. The Lord instructed them to begin the fight at Mount Tabor, and Mount Tabor was in Zebulun's land. The battle would start there on the high place of the field around Mount Tabor. The men of Zebulun and Naphtali were willing to fight to their deaths to win back Israel's freedom. That's what the text means. Verse 19 uses the word kings. We must remember that every Canaanite city was surrounded by villages. The cities were walled, the villages were not walled. And so when trouble came, the people from the villages would run into the walled cities for safety. Well, every Canaanite city with its villages had a king. And when the kings came and fought all the cities in the Canaanite land up there that were supposed to be destroyed, they came to fight. They joined together to fight under the direction of Caesarea and for their king, their major king, whose name was Jabin, and they came to fight against the Israelites. Now, the villages of Taanach and Megiddo both sit on the left side of the river Kishon, or the Kishon River. In chapter 4, we learn that the battle started at the foot of Mount Tabor and proceeded from there. Taanach lays 15 miles from Tabor. So in chapter 4, we learned that the Israelites fought and killed the Canaanite army, but its commander got away and ran to his hometown right there on the shores of Lake Merom. And the heaviest part of the battle occurred at Taanach, where the waters of the Kishon and were flowing quickly. And the Canaanites were not successful there. The winner in a battle always gathers up the spoils of the other army, which also included silver. And get this, at this time in history of Israel, silver to the people of Israel was more valuable to the average man than gold was, because the common man used silver to purchase supplies. He used silver to purchase food. And because the Canaanites were all destroyed, they took no silver in spoils from the Israelites. Well, in Deborah's song, she included those who also helped the fight. The helpers, I'm telling you, were under the divine control of the Lord. Verse number 20. The stars fought from heaven. From their courses they fought against Caesarea. The torrent of Kishon swept them away. The ancient torrent, the torrent Kishon. O my soul, march on with strength. Then the horse's hoofs beat from the dashing of his valiant steeds. Curse Meroz, said the angel of the Lord, utterly curse its inhabitants, because they did not come to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the warriors. The Lord used the forces of nature to help his people Israel, which he always did. Meteorites fell to harm Sisera's army. The flooding of the Kishon River rushed against Sisera's army. All that has been mentioned allowed the horses of the Canaanites to be so frightened that they trampled their own owners when they fell. Now, who was Meroz? Meroz was actually a village that sat just 12 miles from Samaria. It was a little village that was on the path of the battle as it was leading from Mount Tabor to Naphtali. As it swings down and around, it actually comes out, that Kishon River comes down, swings around, comes over, and comes back up like this. It was on that path from Mount Tabor to Naphtali, sitting there on that Kishon River. Deborah is telling us that as this battle passed through Meroz, the Israelites in Meroz did not lend a hand to fight. Therefore, the angel of the Lord cursed the people of that town. The army of Caesarea was dead, but Caesarea was still alive. We know the story of this tragic death, but at this point in the chapter, we are introduced to the woman of Deborah's song, and whose name was Jael. We hear about her again in verse number 24. Most blessed of women is Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite. Most blessed is she of women in the tent. He asked for water and she gave him milk. In a magnificent bowl she brought him curds. She reached out her hand for the tent peg and her right hand for the workman's hammer. Then she struck Caesarea. She smashed his head. She scattered and pierced his temples. Between her feet he bowed. He fell. He lay. Between her feet he bowed. He fell. Where he bowed, there he fell dead. Deborah added a few new facts here in this passage. In addition to the milk, Jael also was fed, she fed Caesarea curds. Now, when milk was churned, the curds were often pressed into what we, into a form of cheese. Something like what we call blue cheese, that's the texture of what it would be. It's curds. In this case, it is right to assume that she gave Caesarea milk to drink and cheese to eat, a meal fit for a noble. Now, even though, and you know the rest of the story, how she killed him, and even though Deborah was a judge, I want to tell you this, she was also a woman and a female. Deborah looked at the consequences and she had to look past his death. And she looks past his death to see Caesarea's own mother in verse number 28. Out of the window she looked and lamented, the mother of Sisera through the lattice. Why does his chariot delay in coming? Why do the hoofbeats of his chariot tarry? Her wise princesses would answer her, indeed, she repeats her words to herself. Are they not finding? Are they not dividing the spoil? A maiden? Two maidens for every warrior? to Sisera a spoil of dyed work, a spoil of dyed work embroidered, dyed work of double embroidery on the neck of the spoiler. For 20 years, her Canaanite commander's son always came home. A little extra was in his pocket for his mother, and perhaps a new maiden or maybe two on his arm, and a beautiful piece of cloth around his neck. But this time at war, he did not come home to his mother. The consequences of war, the takeaway here is, the consequences of sinning against the Lord, the takeaway here is, there will always result in the same ending. Here's the takeaway. The mother or loved ones and fathers of those who do not come will be brokenhearted. No matter if they were evil or not, they'll be brokenhearted. The enemy of Israel was dead. Finally, the writer records the benediction of Deborah's song, the prayer to the Lord concerning Israel's enemies in verse 31a. Thus let all your enemies perish, O Lord, but let those who love Him be like the rising of the sun in its might. It is a correct prayer. It is a prayer that pleases the Lord. It matches His promise to the nation of Israel. His command was for all the Israelite Canaanite enemies to be destroyed because they worshiped other gods and not the one and only God Himself. But the writer added one last line in this chapter to establish the result of the story of Deborah's song in verse 31b. And the land was undisturbed for 40 years. Deborah followed the Lord to free Israel. 20 years of oppression, then 40 years of freedom.